Have you ever wondered if you could forgive someone that has caused you pain? Thanks for joining me today on the Parable Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Zapchank, and today we're going to have a conversation with author Teresa Reif, who shares how through the pain of her childhood, God was still there.
It isn't just a like, help me, Jesus, in the moment, he's just going to fix it all. Yes, he will, but we have to participate in that fixing. And forgiveness is absolutely, we have to participate. There's just not a magical potion or waving of the wand like I think we'd like to think.
A note for today's audio, Teresa shares about childhood abuse and how that has affected her. I just wanted you to know in case you have little ears around or you are triggered by this subject content. Here's my conversation with Teresa Reif. Teresa, welcome to the Parable Podcast. I am so excited to talk to you. Like I told you before, I love meeting through mutual friends. We met through Taylor Warburton. She was on episode 74. Tell me a little bit about how you met Taylor.
Taylor and I met in a group from Propel Ecclesia, and we were in a cohort together there where we really were coached and studied under Christine Kane and a bunch of other coaches, Tara Beth Leach. And so we got the opportunity to really be spurned on and empowered in our leadership and in women leadership and ministry and so many areas that just so good to connect with people who are doing the same thing, similar things, different things, but all for Jesus. And so we all just really connected and our hearts were really just knitted together so quickly. So it was a huge blessing.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
What was the initial tug? Like, I want to be a part of something like that.
I think just feeling like, first of all, I think sometimes as a woman in leadership, there's really not very many people above me that I can look to, rely on, be encouraged by. You know, there just really isn't a wealth of people that have gone ahead. And that really, not that there aren't women who are faithful, but just women who aren't necessarily doing all the things that I'm now doing. And so that need, I think Christine Kane has always been that person for me, even though, of course, it's not like we really hang out. You know, we don't really like shim around. But because of who she is and how amazing she is, I've relied on her in that way. And so when the opportunity presented itself, and it was just a God thing, because I don't always get on and get to listen to her. Propel does a lot of really good webinars where you can join in and be encouraged and hear personally from a lot of the women leadership. But this one, I just happened to be available for and made it, because a lot of times I have to admit I'm terrible. I'll sign up for them because I see them. And I'm like, yes, I want to do that. My heart wants to do it. And then a meeting comes up, or I have to pick up my kids from school, or something happens. Yeah. And this one particular one was the one they announced, Propel Ecclesia. Yeah. Christine Kane announced it herself. And so I've never done anything so fast in my life. So it was so good. I'm just so grateful that I got to spend that time, because we've been church planning for a really long time. And so I think once we hit that in-person summit was when I realized, wow, I have some dry areas that I really have been pulling up my bootstraps and making it through. And probably that's from being a New Englander, because you gain some toughness to you. And I think I had really been, instead of applying my faith, I had been just applying my own personal natural toughness. And I really was watered in those areas that were just so dry in my heart.
Yeah.
Just encouraged that God saw me.
I think that's so cool, because there's so many people. That's the beauty of the internet sometimes, you know, and just being able, there's so many people, so many voices out there that can speak into our life. Yeah. Maybe we're not hanging out with Christine Kane on the weekends, but I mean, we can have these opportunities where we get to learn and grow. And so I'm so glad for you. You said you were a New Englander, but I know that you currently live in Austin, Texas. Tell me a little bit about how you moved there.
It was kind of a crazy process. My husband took a job right after we got married. We were in Boston and got married in that area. And 6 months after we were married, he got an opportunity to take his life dream job. And as a newly married woman, I fell for it, I have to admit. And so we moved actually all the way to Seattle, Washington, where he took a computer game job. And God worked that out. A year later, it took us quite a long time, but we found a church called the City Church, and it changed everything for us. And we really say we grew up there. We were in our early 20s. Mm-hmm. Our kids grew up there. So our oldest is now 20, almost 25. And towards her high school years, probably like, I think it was about junior year, we felt the call to Austin, Texas. And some of our closest friends, they were going, the Holy Spirit actually told me ahead of time that they were moving, which was really just an amazing kind of crazy thing. you know, we just knew, we prayed about it. My husband was actually born here in Austin, Texas, and had never been back. So oh, wow. He was adopted here in Austin, Texas. And then his dad was doing his postdoc at UT. And when that mm-hmm. was finished, he got a job at Northeastern University in Boston. And so had never then left Boston, grew up there, stayed there, same house. They still own the same house, the whole nine yards, and had never come back to Austin, Texas until we were called here. So God really pulled us out of Seattle and brought us here, which has been an amazing, incredible church planting hard ground experience, yeah. but worth it. And so exciting to see what God has done in our church. Our church now has gone from, we were at probably, I just want to say probably 800 to 1,000 people. And now we're at the 5,000 to 8,000.
Wow. It just, wow.
In 2 years, our church has just grown and done amazing, really incredible. Mm. Seen so many people saved. So super exciting. Wow. Yeah. So that was our road to Austin. And here we are almost 10 years. So it'll be 10 years in March. So
I was in Austin for just a brief moment of time a couple years ago, and I got to take my first ever Segway tour of your city.
That was so fun. I've done that. You look like a complete fool, but it is so fun. The helmet and the giant, yes. You know, and I was nervous. Were you nervous?
I was a little nervous as yeah. well, because yeah. of course I love the idea of adventure, but I'm like, do I want to be run over in the streets of Austin? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But we did it. I would highly suggest it if you ever want to go to any kind of city where you just kind of want to see a couple different things and you get to see different neighborhoods. I loved our guide as well. Yeah. It was just really, really fun.
I felt like they told some things that you wouldn't know. You wouldn't be able to find out for yourself unless you knew someone who was guiding a tour. So yeah, mm-hmm. I loved it too. My friend hit a curb and fell off. That was not a
for the gosh. Segue.
That was my biggest fear, that like I would fall off the thing. But the tour was great.
Well, Teresa, you have a husband and you said you have 3 daughters. Tell us a little bit about them and, you know, what you're passionate about these days.
My family is great. I love having 3 girls. We just really enjoy being a family. And so they're now so much older. So it's just a different season with almost 25, almost 22, and almost 17. And so I'm really have young adults and 1 teenager. So I'm also still leading in church, but also in the throes of still being mom. And I love that. I love that. Yeah. I love that God's given me the capacity to do those things because, woof, I love being a mom. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
So, and it's actually, eventually, it's part of my parable story. So we'll kind of get to that. But right now, what I do in our church, I do a lot of things, to be quite honest. I get to teach in our Next Steps class, which is our membership class on week 2. And I love that. That's the week where we get to help people discover where they'll fit into our community based on who God made them. And so we do some personality tests and we do a spiritual gifts test. And that week for me is just super fun. And so I get to do that the second week of every month. That's on Sundays. And then during the week, I focus on our Leadership Academy. And so it's called City Reach Leadership Academy. And we run a night track every Tuesday night. And what I love about that is we're helping people no matter what their vocation, no matter what they're paid to do, right? No matter how they draw a paycheck, we're helping them take that space and still be a leader for Jesus and still be a minister and still realize that they're called to that place because God put them there. They have the job. And so just helping them get the opportunity. And what I love too is our age ranges. I think the youngest is 23 and the oldest is 74. And so we just have this range. That's really cute because every time I get up to share or teach, I'll say something to the effect of, well, at my age and my ladies, my 2 ladies in the back are in their 70s, raise their hands. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're not old, you know, they give me a hard time. So it's been super fun. That's just been an incredible, incredible opportunity to really, you know, learn myself too and push myself out of some comfort zone where I haven't done that before. And I spent a lot of years homeschooling my kids. And so I really feel like God just really taught me to teach well and to look at, you make sure that my character's in line with who God, you know, has called me to be. And so I think now I get to be in this space where I'm actually getting to launch other people. And so it's just such an incredible blessing to see, even just in this year, this 1 year, their changes, the changes in their lives. So
it's just fun to be able to just try so many different things within a church. You know, there's just so many different ways to serve. I've been a part of church ministry for quite some time. And I think sometimes for us, we only see, you know, what is foreground on a Sunday morning. You're like, well, I don't play the guitar. I don't really love like greeting people that I don't know. And I don't love changing diapers. So you kind of think like, is that it? Mm-hmm. And no, there's so much more. And much more. I think, yeah, like to have that heart to help people find that space where God has gifted you with so many things. And what is it for you? And that's exciting, I think.
It's super fun to be with them in the membership class in that process and then see them opening a door.
Yeah.
The coffee or, you know, helping out in their area of gifting. Super excited to see God do that.
Teresa, you talked about church planting. So did you help plant this church or was that something that you've been a part of since you moved to Austin?
We moved to Austin to help plant this church.
Okay.
And previous to that, with City Church, we planted another campus. And so we've been church planting for, I think we figured out recently, 17 years we've been church planting. Mm-hmm. And technically, the church we're a part of now is a newer church plant of the church that we moved here to start. Because we were two churches, through 2020, we were two churches that came together. And so really, the church we're a part of has been only going for 2 years. Because it's, as much as it's similar and has a strong DNA of the church we came here and planted, it's a new church in so many ways. So it's where we're at. We love to build. We just really love to be a part of building. So
what's something that has been the biggest challenge in church planting? Because gosh, it's like you're starting from almost nothing, you know, and it can feel overwhelming. So what's one of the challenges, at least for you, that you've felt over the years?
I think for me, my biggest challenge is finding balance between my family and the church family, because I feel that pull when people, you know, having boundaries with people who really are needy and we get that, right? And I'm super, my heart is compassionate at first. And so I think my biggest lesson I had to learn was making sure that I care about my people with that highest of priority, because I look back and I can pick areas where I failed in that area. And I realize, ooh, thank you, Lord, that now I know what the boundary looks like. I know what it sounds like. Because I think sometimes I didn't even have the words to say in the moment. And so I just said yes and did what was kind of, you know, needy. And the church is made for, that's people, you know, and people come with baggage and things that they need. And when you're the leader, right, you get the opportunity to help people, but we also have to just balance that. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson and the hardest lesson I had to learn. I mean, there were just times when it was clear I needed to stop and really pay attention and be home, or you know, say no to a meeting, or say no to a coffee, or say no. And I think that balance between how do I do that, meet the needs of people, encourage the church, lead, you know, and still meet them, I think that's probably the biggest stretch.
I would completely agree with you. And I don't know if that's like a similar personality that we have, but you want to help. You feel like, gosh, like this is what God has called me to do. Yeah. Like this is how I'm helping people. But yeah, you're right. You have to recognize like you have other people at home, even just like for your own self, to recognize you're going to eventually hit burnout if you just keep giving and not pouring into yourself or your family. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that, because sometimes we think like, oh, well, if this is our gift, we have to just like burn the candle at both ends, right?
Yeah. And I think for burnout, one thing really the Holy Spirit pointed out to me a few years ago was that the Holy Spirit literally said to me, you can retreat at any moment. You can have that benefit of a retreat moment. Because I definitely had days where I'm like, I just want to quit. I just want to run away. I want to hide in the closet. You know, I want to just, I need a getaway. Like I need to go to Florida. I need to go to the beach. You know, it was just always felt like, you know, but God really said, you know, you can have a retreat mindset because of the power you have within you. You can rely on me in the moment. And the Bible talks about that, a moment in his presence, you know. And so that really was also just the biggest answer from the Lord that I needed in that season of, okay, here we go.
Well, Teresa, the Parable Podcast, as you already know, is really about stories. Mm-hmm. It's about sharing some of the moments in our life where we can look back and say, wow, God was with me through that. And here is what he's taught me. Sometimes we look back and we're like, did that matter? And it did. It really did. So I'd love for you to share with us what was one of your parable stories today.
Really, my life story, honestly, it feels like one big parable as I look back. When people ask me, you know, what is your testimony? What is your story? And really just two words. It's really just, but God. Because any situation I was in, he came in. Growing up, we went to church And I accepted Jesus as a really young girl out of fear of hell, really, because our Sunday school teacher, she was awesome. And she was just great at explaining that there was a real heaven and hell. But at six, you know, my response was, no, thank you. On the lake of fire, can I have Jesus? You know, but at home, even though we're at church all the time at home, I was being abused and I was actually being sexually abused and emotionally and physically. And all the words that go before abuse was my life at home. And so that contrast, do you know, but God, because he came and he gave me a curiosity for the Bible and I could hear his voice at a really young age. And that was just a gift that he gave me in order to be able to get through those years. And then even though I was being sexually abused, I got to my teen years and had a confrontation moment. And in that confrontation moment, all my memories just stopped for what had happened in the past. And I really was able then, because of that, God really put his hand over my head. And I really just, all those memories became repressed. But in those teen years, I had amazing youth leaders and I was in an amazing youth group that I was really able and taught how to develop my own relationship with Jesus. And that saved me, not having to face the trauma that I had had and really just being able to focus clearly on my relationship with Jesus. That was my but God moment in my teen years, where I just was able to really delve in, really understand prayer, really be able to just have people love me. And I believed that they loved me, because when you're abused, that's kind of a hard space. I still, even at my age, I'm 53, I still sometimes have to decide that that person loves me, except for my people. I know my people that God gave me love me, but new people or whatever. And, you know, as I went into then my 20s, my memories came back. And, you know, that was just a really terrible season, to be quite honest. I dealt with nightmares and crying. I just, I'm not a crier. So then to cry, I cried for just a lot. Do you know about God? Because he had set me in a place, he had given me a place to live with a woman that cared about me. And she had been a former youth leader of mine and really put me in a place where I had a job that had good insurance. So I got a counselor. Just God took care by his grace and his mercy. He had already set me up, because he knew. It wasn't a surprise to him that my memories were going to come back. And so God really, in that space, saved me again, I think. But God saved me again and again and again and again. Because then really just facing those memories, I was really suicidal and really had no sense of future and hope. The word future, the word hope, all those things just didn't mean anything. It was like a blank wall. I couldn't really my brain couldn't even really understand those words, because it just didn't make sense. I just had none of that. But God, again, he just continued to love me, to parent me, just to really show me that people cared. I purposefully at that time just went to a counselor that wasn't a Christian, because the church had hurt me as well. And, you know, there were just so many layers. And even this person who even said, because my first time sitting with her actually said, so you're not a Christian, right? Because I don't want any part of that. You know, I just was like, I can't handle anyone telling me to go read my Bible and pray. I can't even get there, you know. There were too many layers that I needed to really work on to get back to that point again. My life verse is this. It's Psalm 40, verse 2. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire, and he set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. Despite the fact that I had scars and pain, and I had actually quit going to church for a while because I couldn't face having to, first of all, the church I grew up in, everyone knew. So I couldn't face that, the weight of it, just because unfortunately the story went wildfire through our church under the premise of a prayer line. And, you know, I mean, it just, all the awesome church hurt was there. But you know, I knew God was with me even still. I knew he was there. I felt like the thing that he kept really just trying to impress in my heart was that it doesn't matter where you are, I'm there, you know, I'm there. So it didn't matter if I wasn't able to make it to those four walls, I was still with God and he was still with me. And so really, he was so faithful in those times. And, you know, despite the fact that I was in counseling and I was talking to a woman who, you know, really just didn't know Jesus, and that was okay. She gave me so many tools. She helped me so much, because talking through it was almost harder, right? Just, it was like being being faced with it all over again and really going through it all over again. I was having nightmares that were the memories coming back. And it was such a hard season. But, you know, in that time, God softened my heart in so many ways. I just felt like every time a memory would come and I would just let it go and decide. There were a lot of decisions I had to make that were hard. Do you know, God was always drawing me back to himself. And I really just felt that love and really that safe space. And really in the way that he had already provided that place for me to live, the people that were my roommates were just so kind and so tender with me and just made spaces for me to just be. And so God had already just taken care of me in that space. And, you know, I was really afraid to join a church community again. And so once I got to the space where kind of things had calmed down a little bit, just started realizing, okay, it would be nice to be back in what is some normalcy really for me, because I grew up going to church, right? And I was really used to that comforting feeling of going on a Sunday and being seen and knowing people and having them care about me and really hearing the word of God. I knew that that was where my heart was drawn. And so through that season, I think I learned, you know, I didn't have to go to the church that I grew up in. So that was really a big step for me, even though part of me was like, yeah, but I already know that, you know, that's maybe it's comfortable, but it wasn't comfortable. I mean, so many reasons why it wasn't comfortable. But God provided a church for me where there were people my own age where it was different enough that I could sit and be loved and made just amazing friendships and just had fun. Really was just able to be what I had not been able to be, was a kid. I just was able to just be a kid. We played volleyball and went bowling and, you know, did all the things, and we were in our early 20s. And so it was fun. It was really good. And I think he really showed me that that was something that it was okay to have, you know, so really just giving me permission and grace to do that. And then in that same space, I never saw myself as having a future and a hope. I really had never. But in that space of that new church community, I really felt like that was what God was showing me, kind of through other people's lives, to be quite honest. Yeah. People would get engaged in our college and career group, and I'd be like, oh, that's nice for them. So happy for you. But I just always thought of myself as someone who that just wasn't going to happen for me, because I kind of thought of it as a luxury. You know, I kind of thought, well, you know, I just have to get through this life, right? I kind of was in still major survival mode. Like, right? I just have to pay my bills, Lord. I just can't even think about having to deal with someone else and their stuff. I have to just face my own. But you know what's amazing is even then, through that, God brought me into a group of friends where we were hanging out. My sister ended up dating one of the guys in our friend group. And then I ended up, through that relationship, getting to know this other guy. And so we became friends, and he was just kind. And I kind of had dated a lot. And so when I met him, I thought, in my first thought, oh, he's a marrying type. This is not going to work for me. He doesn't know, you know? And I think that was always my thing is like, oh, he doesn't know how broken I am. He doesn't know what I won't be able to do, or, you know, like it just, I just saw myself as so in pieces that I never wanted to be in a relationship where I was the weak, you know, link. And I think that's how I thought of myself. Like, they don't know what they'd be getting into, right? And those were some things that were said over me, honestly, that I was just still holding on to and still believing and still agreeing with. But do you know, that boy was so patient and he was so kind and he was a gift from God. And we knew each other for quite a while, which was what I needed as well, patience. And, you know, at one point God told me, hey, you're going to marry him. And I was like, oh, that's not happening, you know. And there again, it was really just response to what I saw, how I saw myself, right? And I told my sister, I was like, oh my gosh, you know what God told me? And she said, duh, of course. And I was like, what? You know, with your siblings, it's just such a funny thing how she just said it like it was normal. And I looked at her like, you're crazy, you know? How could you say, yeah, duh, you know? But, you know, I ended up marrying that boy, and it was the best thing that ever happened in my life. I really, through him, finally believed that a person would love me like Jesus, you know? And I really didn't think that was possible. And so, but God, he got in there. He didn't leave me on my own and gave me a husband, and throughout the years gave us 3 daughters. And do you know that after I had my third, we had had a lot of complications. So our first 2 were preemies and really never should have made it. Like, they're just, by all medical reasonings, just so many things were against them, and they did just fine. And then our third, because we had had all the complications, they did a bunch of tests afterwards because, thank you, they were concerned about me. So we did all these tests, and my doctor actually leaned across the desk and said, I want to tell you something. I have no idea how you ever had three children. Inside of you, it's like death.
Wow.
So even then, but God brought life out of death. And only he can do that. Only he can do that. And so what's amazing for me is thankfully we never knew that. In my life, forgetfulness and not knowing some things has been such a gift. You know, it's hard if you want to have children and you can't. It's a struggle and it's a desperate place. And God saved me from that. People go through just hard, hard things. We probably would have adopted because my husband was adopted. That's an amazing option and incredible. But God had a different plan that we didn't even know about. And so he just managed to jump in there again, which I'm so thankful for. And you know, the last part of my parable really is, and my story is that I never told people about what happened to me. I never did. And it was never my plan. Most people, when I tell them what happened to me, they don't know how to handle it, first of all. And then their response hurts me. And so a few times over my lifetime, I would try, you know, a couple of times I felt the leading of the Lord and that was what was supposed to happen. Sometimes I've had people accuse me of loving the Bible too much. That didn't go well. That wasn't a good moment for me. But some of the ways that I've had conversations and told people, you know, this is what's happened in my life, it just set me up for what I thought wasn't meant to be, you know, kind of like, okay, that's just taboo. I can't have those conversations. I'm going to protect other people. I'm going to keep it to myself. But do you know, the truth is that it's always been a part of my story. And so to keep it to myself, I just knew God was calling me to a different place. That was a long process. And I had to really go through. And I think my final question was, God, where were you? You know, and I think that was the hardest question I had to find an answer to. And that's really when he showed me that he protected me, even though someone else took their sin out on me. Right. And there's a difference when we sin and hurt ourselves to when we sin and we hurt someone else. Right. And so for the person who was on the receiving end of that sin, it's a lot to work through. And so then having to talk to other people about it, I thought, no, that's a whole world of hurt. And then to honestly just keep forgiveness in that story, because I also didn't want to influence anyone else to gain my offense. And so even though it hurt, even though, you know, it doesn't mean every man is that way, it doesn't mean that that's going to happen to every woman. And so I was just so careful in that space. I didn't want to injure. I wanted to help. When I was going through all my stuff and really facing memories, I had a really hard time finding resources that were helpful. It was either a clinical book that I could find that really, I most of those, honestly, sorry to anyone out there who's written a clinical book ahead of time, but honestly, I would pick them up and I'd think, this person was never sexually abused, because what they're saying here, that's nice, but it doesn't work that way, you know? And so ideas are good, tools are good, but I just never was able to find those tools in a textbook myself. That's why they go to school for so long, is what I'm assuming. You know, I didn't, but good job, guys. Counselors go to school for a long time for a good reason, right? But I just wasn't able to pull anything personally out of that. And then my other options were personal books that people have written, but a good majority of the ones that I found and read actually had physical details of what had happened to people. Yeah. And I could not. Those things devastated me to where, man, I have so many books I bought and just got rid of because I thought I can't re-injure myself. Sadly, some of those are still used today, given out by counselors. Mm-hmm. And so I just knew, God, there needs to be a resource, something. And as I prayed into that, God was like, you're right. There does need to be something. And so I really never thought I would publicly share, write a book, which I did. I never thought that I would put sexual abuse in the title either, but my husband is a search engine optimization expert amongst a thousand other things, technically, like with technology speaking, but he was my editor. And so he also made sure sexual abuse, which was in the title, so that people can find my book, you know. But what I did differently with my book is I wrote about what God did in the process, what God did in the aftermath of what happened to me, how God took what happened to me and turned it into a beautiful thing of forgiveness and letting go and moving on and, you know, just realizing that he was the thread. He was the common thread throughout that. And so I never thought But God, He got in there and didn't let me stay where I was. And now regularly, it's amazing how many people I have met, you know, who've never told anyone, who have never had anyone who could relate, who've never had anyone they would tell. And so I get to be that safe space for people.
Gosh, Teresa, thank you so much for your honesty and your willingness to share your story. I can't imagine, you know, when you have to like live and you feel like, maybe because of shame, because you don't want to burden anybody else, or you're worried about how somebody else is going to hear your story and receive it. That is a challenge, a huge challenge that, as you have already said, you've walked through the entirety of your life. One thing, just out of curiosity, you said after your confrontation moment early on that God then kind of blocked those memories, you repressed it, and you were able to really invest in your relationship. I just think that's so beautiful that, you know, you're like, okay, well, you had the confrontation, but you were able to take this moment and just to see how He loved you and how you built that relationship. Talk to me a little bit about what He was showing you through that season.
There were lots of times I spent trying to figure out things, you know, questions that I had because of growing up in church. I think that there was a lot of churchy talk, right? Churchy conversations and churchy words like grace and mercy and righteousness, you know. And I think through that process, I asked a lot of questions. I asked questions of my pastor. I asked questions of anyone, honestly, that would sit down with me. I would ask, well, what the heck? Why do you guys just say, ooh, His mercies are new every morning? Who cares? Like, what does that even mean to me? You know? And so I just spent that time being very real. And as a teenager, which I have teenagers, I've had two who are now young adults, but I still have one teenager. And what I love about them is they're much more raw than we are. They don't hold back. They're not worried about the things they say and how they say them. And God just put me in those teen years, in those places where I was able to just ask questions and really not care what people thought of me because I didn't know. Because honestly, truthfully, I felt stupid that I didn't know what grace was and mercy was. And especially because all these people knew I grew up in church, you know? And so the expectation was, well, of course, you know, what His promises of the Bible are and what all those fruits of the Spirit are, and you have them memorized. But you can have the fruits of the Spirit memorized, and those are just words. And until you understand what those mean by the power of the Holy Spirit, by some more study, by getting to ask questions, curiosity is a gift when we're curious. And I really know that God made me curious, and I'm willing to be curious, even if it's uncomfortable. And I had to in those moments, really just, you know, I think I pulled back quite a bit. My tendency was I was friends with everyone in school. There wasn't a person that wasn't my friend. And so all my friends came to youth group. I was the reason why youth group was, you know, lots of kids. And I was able to have fun, you know, in those years. And I think it's actually one of my top three values. My values are truth, love, and fun, no matter how I slice it. Those are my, I've tried. I've studied a lot about values, and that's just who I am. I'm like, okay.
You said in your 20s, those memories started to come back, the things that have been repressed. Were you angry at all that it started coming back because you'd been in such a beautiful place of learning and curiosity? And the Christian life, it isn't sunshine and roses all the time. You have to like deal with that. So now that God had protected you from it so long, were you angry? Like, why am I having to work through this right now?
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, I've had seasons where I've been even pulled back into that once I had daughters.
Yeah.
So I would say in that season, especially, I dealt with anger a lot. And I'm Irish and Scottish. So just the warring sometimes I say, oh, I used to honestly say, oh, well, I'm just Irish and Scottish. That's why I'm spicy and I get a little passionate and angry sometimes. But the truth is that more importantly, it was all that I dealt with. And I don't want to be an angry person. So I'm kind of that person in the crowd who's like, oh, yay, let's go. And so naturally, in that my natural person, because fun is my value, you know, I'd rather just like, ooh. But at that point, when all my memories started coming back, it was overwhelming, the amount of just how could you or why, right? And how could you hurt a little child, right? At 16, I was teaching in our first grade Sunday school at our church and loved it. But to see them and envision myself. Those two things coming together were just overwhelmingly painful. And so the anger was piece by piece. And I think to lower my I had to lower my expectations for myself, because I think sometimes we expect ourselves to just be adult, you know, to get over it. We tell ourselves a lot of things. One of the things I really appreciated about my counselor was she just kept saying, hey, however you feel, there's no bad feelings. Anger isn't a bad feeling. Jesus got angry. And I know God put that in there for a reason. Jesus wept. He cried. He had emotion. And I know for me, that was always God reminding me, hey, I'm not a super emotional person. I'm pretty even keeled most of the time. But I know for me, when my emotions start to really get a little louder, I have to pay attention, to be quite honest. I have to pay attention. I have to realize something's going on here. I need to sit back. I need to roll back. I need to take a little time out like we used to give our kids, you know, like just breathe for a second. And so, yeah, I mean, I will say anger is a process though, because there's even still times now where I feel like as much as I possibly can, I'm on the other side of healing. But that doesn't mean that the memories can't come back. Because still for me, sometimes there's a smell. There's a song. A song popped on the radio the other day, and it's a Christian song. But I was like, you know, I really like, I just like hurt my stomach, you know. And so, but you know, God is faithful still in those moments. But it's amazing how our feelings, they can have power over us. We have to just continue to really submit them and surrender them to Jesus, because He cares about all those feelings.
Teresa, you had mentioned that, you know, you didn't want to share a lot of this with anyone. I'd love for you to kind of speak into, as you said, you were so patient with your soon-to-be husband, and he was patient with you. What was it like when you finally shared with him this piece of you? Because your identity is not just based in this one moment in time. It is far beyond that, but it has shaped your identity. So what was it like to share that with him and his reaction?
Yeah, thankfully, being in kind of the same community, he had kind of heard some of the things just from, because we were in a friend group. And I mean, it was a super emotional time. So I wouldn't, like, as much as I'm even keeled now, that was not the season. In that season, my emotions were really unpredictable. And so we would have plans and I wouldn't show up, you know? And so it was kind of like, well, you know, so some, they were just the most sweetest people. And so they would try, you know, well, she's just, it's a hard day, or, you know, but but through kind of a process of time, you know, he thankfully, honestly, it was the best thing for me in this way. He knew some things. And so he knew enough. And we kind of did some get together breakup moments in there. And it was all me. I mean, it was just all me. And so to resolve that with someone else in the picture's so much harder. And I talk to women all the time who've been married all these years and are now just dealing with it. It's so hard. It's so much harder. But he, when we finally sat down, funny enough, we were at Taco Bell, which I can't eat at anymore. I'm allergic to corn. But anyway, we were at Taco Bell and I just remember the huge Mountain Dew. That's why I just, we're sitting there across a Mountain Dew and I just kind of laid the whole thing out. And he said, yeah, I kind of had an idea. His response was miraculous. He just was almost like, so, you know, and not in a crass way, but in a like, I get it. Sorry, you know. He didn't say a lot. I think that was the best gift, to be quite honest. And he wasn't trying to fix me. And I think that's a key, that if you're on the other side of a conversation with someone who's been sexually abused, there's not a solution. There's not an easy, really, Jesus is the only answer. And that's the most questions, right? Maybe there's a question out there that doesn't have the answer of Jesus, but I haven't found one yet. And so really just, he was such a gift to me in that way, where he didn't mind just being, you know, and I think in that season was exactly what I needed.
Yeah, that's a good point for anyone who has any conversation where somebody is really sharing their heart, their soul, some pain points in their life. For myself, I'm like, okay, how can I fix this situation? But it is about just being a good listener and just being there in the moment for them and saying, I hear what you're saying and I'm so sorry, you know? Teresa, my dad was abused as a child. And so growing up, there was a point where he and my mom had to tell us. I specifically remember I was in fourth grade when obviously you have to share that in a way that is appropriate for your child's age.
Yes.
But I do remember finding out that, and it just, it took me like a while to figure that out. And I felt like I dealt with that even as I grew older. And like what you said, when you were teaching Sunday school, when you were 16 and like looking at those kids of like looking at his family, like, how did this happen? Like, yeah. What is wrong?
Yeah.
Anger. How was it for you to, you know, have these three beautiful daughters and to love them, to mother them, and also just release them into the world? Because you're right, like sin is out there and we don't want to have our children like hurt in any way. Mm-hmm. So what was that like?
It really became a walk of trusting Jesus like never before. I think one thing, we're in the season now with young adults, and I've always said to my girls, listen, I'm human. Like if you put me in a room and you say, who in here is human? I'm going to raise my hand every single time, because to be human is to be flawed. And God knew that. He made us that way on purpose so that we would need him. But there will be times when you get to be these ages, especially where you'll kind of think, wow, when mom did that, that was terrible. And I'm always saying to them, come ask me, please come tell me. I want to love you enough to say, I'm so sorry. I really just sucked in that moment. You know, I mean, like really, like just to be real, it just, no one is a perfect parent. And I think that probably for me was one of my biggest fears, was that I would ruin my kids based on my past. And I knew that that wasn't something that I wanted. And so there again, Jesus was the answer to that question. What do I do, Lord? He placed us in a church that was phenomenal. Honestly, I had pastors, women pastors over me that were just so practical and so spirit-filled all at the same time. And so sitting with them and getting to ask questions and hearing them say, listen, you have to discipline your children. It's okay. You're not hurting them. You're helping them, you know? And so, because for me, all I had in my pocket for parenting was the, I'm going to just do the opposite of what my parents did. And you know, that's a vacuum. That actually wouldn't produce much goodness. I needed some practical and I needed a lot of Jesus and I needed backup. And I think that's one area where with parenting, we can rely only on ourselves and we think we have to have it all, the answers ourselves. But that's not actually true at all. And in fact, I just kind of gathered information and asked God what was for me and what wasn't for me and went from there and hoped that it would work out. And my prayer life increased, I'll tell you. I still spend my nights praying for my kids because I know I'm flawed. I know I carried with me a lot of background. But honestly, we all do. To be quite honest, it's just our attitude that can get in the way. And so I just was laying my attitude down like, Lord, you know, I feel like this is a wrong attitude. I think it's from my childhood. Help me here because I don't even know. You know, a lot of times I didn't even know what it would look like. But I just had to rely on Jesus to love me. And, you know, God parents us as we parent. And I say that to a lot of people. You know, like I said, I think we have to have all the answers, but actually we don't. The just bottom line truth is that's why we have God. He's the one who has all the answers.
Yeah, that's so good, Teresa. I mean, there's so many things that as I've parented or even in any relationship, you have God kind of giving back this mirror image of yourself and be like, you need to also learn this as you're sharing this. Teresa, I'd love for you to speak on the idea of forgiveness. You talked about, you know, how somebody's sin affects your life when it is done to you. And I don't know how we can share that forgiveness sometimes. Like that is right, only but God that allows us to have that. Tell me how forgiveness is played out through this part of your parable story.
I think that it was a process. I know for a fact that forgiveness is a decision first. It just really has to be a decision because our feelings aren't really going to tell us that forgiveness is right. Yeah. Honestly, because if forgiveness feels wrong, remembering that what happened to us wasn't our fault, remembering that we don't have to own it, remembering that we don't have the responsibility to fix it. I think that the fear in forgiveness is that we have to be in relationship again. And that's a lie of the enemy, right? That every relationship isn't meant to be. I tell my girls this with three girls, man, I'm constantly like, guys, you don't have to be friends with everybody. Yeah. We're not made to be that way. And that's okay. We can release people to be friends with other people. That's okay. And so I think I had to just put myself in the space of deciding to forgive And then, wow, forgiveness is not a one-time thing, because plenty of things have, first of all, tried to come back at me. The enemy will try to bring those things up again, whether it's, like I said, even when there's a smell, when there's a song, you know. So for me, and just in who I am and what my story is, my forgiveness is a little exhausting, to be quite honest. I have days where I'm like, ooh, this is a long day of forgiveness, you know. But God's so faithful in that every time I've decided to forgive, he comes and fills that hole that's left behind. And so we have to trust him. It's really just becomes trusting Jesus, that when you do actually let those things go and give them over. But I'll tell you that with abuse and with someone else's sin, there is a little rub there with forgiveness, yeah, in that even though it's all the time and even though it happens, you know, just understanding, what does that really mean? Have I really forgiven? And I talk to women about this a lot. Knowing that we've actually forgiven is big, because if we haven't, there's bitterness. Mm-hmm. There's anger. There's stuff that stays in us that affects our lives. And so how do we know? I think the question that I had to answer at some level and at some point in my life, probably I think in my, really, it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I really was able to answer this question. So it was a process like anything else, right? Thank you, Jesus, that he's in the whole process. He doesn't just leave us, right? He steadies us as we walk along. That's why that verse is my life verse, yeah, absolutely. Because he didn't just drop me somewhere and walk away and be like, okay, pat you on the back, good luck, let me know how that goes, you know. No, he set me on solid ground and he steadied me as I walked along. And that verse is very much talking about how he came with me, you know. Mm-hmm. But I read a book, and I'm pretty sure it's R.T. Kendall is the name of the author, and it's about forgiveness. And forgiveness is in the title, but forgive me, I don't know what the actual title is. But the thing that I read in there was that when we know we've forgiven, when we cannot, first of all, want anything bad for that person, right? Mm-hmm. Not want revenge. And in fact, we know we've for sure forgiven when we can pray for them and actually want good things for them. And for me, at one point, I found out that my father has cancer. Mm-hmm. And I can remember finding that out and thinking, oh, good. You know, I mean, just to be real, you know, like, wow, okay,
yeah,
well, you deserve that, you know.
Yep.
Literally my first thought, like, just to be candid, you know, my first thought was like, you get what you deserve, you know, like, yeah, what goes around comes around, all the things we can say, right? All the little colloquialisms that can pop up when mm-hmm. something like that happens. But the Holy Spirit just was kind of like, is that how you really feel? Is that how we see people? Is that how you have compassion for people? Mm-hmm. And so I got to sit back and really, like, you know, figure out, Lord, did I really forgive? What is that look like for me? And how does it feel? Because there, even though forgiveness is a choice, the feelings have to line up. So we have to make the choice, and then we have to have faith, and then we have to allow our feelings to go with the choice, right? Yeah. But it is, again, it's a process. Yeah. It's a decision, and you have to keep making the decision. But I think once I knew, okay, Lord, I don't want anything bad to happen to him. I don't want revenge. So it was a decision, but the rest of me kind of had to get on board as well. We have to participate in what God wants to do. And so it isn't just a help me, Jesus, in the moment, he's just going to fix it all. Yes, he will, but we have to participate in that fixing. And forgiveness is absolutely, we have to participate. There's just not a magical potion or waving of the wand, like I think we'd like to think.
I think that is so applicable to so many things, Teresa. You know, when we, forgiveness in anything, and just also forgiveness of ourselves. We carry that weight of shame and hurt and that release over and over, surrendering. Yeah, that's so good. Teresa, if people wanted to learn more about your book or upcoming things, how can they get in touch with you?
The best way to know about what's upcoming with me is really Instagram and Facebook, just staying on social media with me, because I'm pretty good when something's upcoming. I'm about to go on a big mission trip to Africa. And so that's been on my social, which when I first was asked to go, I said, I'm not outdoorsy. So I was kind of like, yeah, I'm called to Austin, Texas. That's about as outdoorsy as I get. But I am going to Africa. So pretty much anything coming up with me will be on there. And then you can find my book on Amazon.
And the name of Teresa's book is Overcoming Sexual Abuse from the Inside Out. And I love the picture on the cover with, like, the cage of just, like, being free from that. And Teresa, thank you for your story. Thank you for just being able to share that with me and how that really can help people feel uncaged, really, from the shame of sexual abuse. So thank you so much for sharing today. There were so many things to take away from that conversation with Teresa. Even if you have never experienced abuse, I'm sure each one of us unfortunately has encountered someone who has. And how can we build empathy and listen well as friends and loved ones? To connect with Teresa, simply visit DanielleZapchank.com for details. And here are two reflection questions from our time with Teresa. Number one, sometimes we look at the mundaneness of our life. So I'd like for you to look over the last few weeks. How has God showed up? And how can you say, but God, and thank Him for being with you every step of the way? Number two, how has God started to bring back maybe some memories or repressed feelings that are coming forward through your emotions or actions? And maybe who is someone safe? Maybe a counselor, a pastor, or a friend that you can work through with those things today. One easy way you can support the Parable Podcast is simply by sharing this episode with a friend. If you could pass that along to a friend today, that would really help people find out about these amazing parable stories. And thank you to my technical producer of a husband for his amazing editing skills. That is going to do it for today. I'm grateful that you took the time to spend it with me. Remember, your parable showcases the but God moments of our life. We'll see you back again next week on the Parable Podcast.